Welcome back. This is the Game Theory Today podcast. I'm Eric Garland. This is part two of our series with Leah McGrath Goodman talking about her recent articles and films about child abuse networks and offshore banking on the Isle of Jersey. The discussion of child abuse networks is very difficult, but it's in the news right now. We're dealing with Congressman Matt Gaetz right now, who is accused of sex trafficking of minors across national borders. Those are crimes that carry a 30-year prison penalty, and he's likely not to be the only one implicated. It's getting bigger all the time. So we come back to explore more of our story that we got into with part one with Leah McGrath Goodman, and we're going to be discussing why the broader public is finally ready to talk about these networks of child abuse. Leah's been at this story for 10 years, and all of a sudden everything's coming out. We're going to look at why. We're going to talk about what Leah learned over a decade about how journalists can report on these kinds of stories without alienating the audience, why the connections to the Jimmy Savile case in England has opened up Jersey's decades-long role in this kind of thing, and why in the United Kingdom you often need to wait for people to die in order to tell their stories because of libel and such laws. Even estates can sue journalists into silence after they're dead. So how do you get the information out? How Leah takes an audience from zero to ignorant. That's a critical first step. And why investigating crimes by elites doesn't just expose criminals, but entire institutions that support and obscure systematic abuses. Glad that we got such a response out of this in last week's episode of the Game Theory Today podcast. And we're digging in. These are not fun stories, but they are pretty necessary. So enjoy part two with Leah McGrath Goodman. So we're back for a little bonus interview with Leah McGrath Goodman, talking more about the Isle of Jersey, $1 trillion here and there, the Queen of England, and more of her research. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
So we had we had quite a robust response to a story that's, you know, kind of hard to get into, involving an island that many people admitted very proudly they did not. I was actually impressed with the humility. I don't know where that is when we started talking about Jersey. You know, some of the material with the abuse and all that can be hard to get into, but we got a lot of response out of that. What was your thoughts?
I do think maybe we're moving into a cultural moment where people are more open to talking about these issues, whereas over a decade ago, when I first started looking at it, there was a really big issue with that, how to write about this, how to report on it, without immediately alienating anyone from being able to listen.
So a decade ago.
Yeah, when I first started looking at Jersey, which was, you know, a little bit over a decade ago. My first trip there was in 2007.
Okay, so, you know, and you started writing about the happenings on the island and Otelegaren in 11 or so, 10, 11, somewhere around there?
I'm not sure the very first article I published. Certainly by 2011, I was openly writing about it. I think prior to that, I was trying to not attract too much attention to myself because the island was well known to not be open to answering questions. And so the more openly you asked questions, the more likely it would be that you would have trouble getting interviews and tracking information.
Wow. So things are opening up now. Why do you think the public is ready to hear this pretty rough story? That's also very complex. What do you think's changed since you've been doing this for a decade now?
Well, my biggest concern starting out back when, you know, we talked a little bit about how Ted Heath, the Prime Minister of Great Britain, was accused of possibly abusing children on the island. He was also on the mainland, I might add. But in addition, a big star at the BBC who is well known to people in the United Kingdom, less so in America. His name was Jimmy Savile. Mm-hmm. He had a big TV show, was much loved in the 70s, and and did a lot of traveling throughout the British Isles to great fanfare and parades. And he also traveled to Jersey, and he also visited Hot de la Garenne and was reportedly one of the abusers there of children. All of that was percolating at the time I started looking at all of this. And yet there was huge pushback, and you know, Jimmy Savile was still alive until 2011.
Yeah. When was his scandal that came out?
I mean, everything really didn't come out until after he died, because there was a lot of, again, even though he was older and there wasn't, it's really unclear why so many of these people continue to be protected. But right after he died, then suddenly all of these people started to come forward, and then there was an official investigation. And in the UK, often if somebody is not deceased, nothing's going to come out, nothing's going to get done. And even after they're deceased, that may also be the case. We've seen situations where families, the estate of that person, will come forward and attack anybody who makes allegations. So it's a lot harder in England to sort of move the needle on reports and allegations of abuse by high level people, VIPs essentially. And that's why there's been so many issues with getting people to not just hear what's happening and hear what's being reported, but also getting people from that point of, it's so hard to get people from zero to just ignorant, right? Like, you have to do a lot, and then you try to give them the story. But back when I started, my biggest obstacle was, how will anyone possibly believe that this is happening?
Yeah.
You know, how will you even get people from zero to ignorant? Get them to a place where they're open to hearing the story, let alone believe the story. So I found that process to be maybe the highest bar of all. You know, reporting it's hard enough, but even getting people to read a story about such a dark subject can be very difficult.
So just so the non-British listeners might understand, I mean, it's very, you know, Jimmy Savile would... it'd be roughly equivalent to finding out that Captain Kangaroo or somebody beloved on Sesame Street was a monster.
Yeah, it would be like a favorite human Sesame Street character, maybe. But more than that, someone who was friends with the president, who was friends with the prime minister, the queens, like, you know, children who knew him. And there's just this huge kind of group of very powerful people in Great Britain who liked him, were photographed with him. Ted Heath was photographed with him. Margaret Thatcher was photographed with him, all of them smiling, having a great time. And, you know, the royal family was known to be involved in various things that he was also involved in. And so he had that sort of stamp of approval from everyone. You know, he's a great guy. He loves children. Like, how could this guy be anything but above suspicion? It was extremely hard to penetrate what was going on and to pierce that veil. And not only that, but when there were reports from various outlets that he had visited the children's home in Jersey when Jimmy Savile went, he insisted that he never had even been there, let alone abused anyone. And it wasn't until after his death that a photograph surfaced much more prominently that showed that he was... it was a photograph literally of him sitting in front of the children's home with children all around him, crowding him. So that kind of did that lie in. But people tolerated those lies until after he died.
So this is, you know, to put it in context, this isn't just about, you know, looking at a single, albeit monstrously industrial scale, you know, child abuse location or operation, or even the $2 trillion of money flowing through the place, which is more than enough to be a huge story. But you're talking about the fabric, the cultural and institutional and authority fabric of a great nation / empire of the United Kingdom. That, you know, if these are people that are directly connected to the prime minister in a country where, you know, and for Americans who don't understand how the British system works, you know, when you are elected prime minister, you still have to go to the queen and ask her permission to form a government, right?
Yeah.
You know, the monarch may not have you know, lawmaking abilities, but, you know, she is, you know, uniquely powerful in the UK. So if you're friends with the, you know, the royal family, that's not a light thing. And to expose that, yes, the royal family was consorting with some of the most monstrous humans on Earth. To get into that story, you're not just looking at the criminal acts, but you're looking at how an entire, you know, country, and of course Britain is more, you know, the United Kingdom is more complicated than that because of the empire, because of the Commonwealth, because of their old holdings and, you know, everything that goes into that. The British, you're really talking about exposing some horrible things behind, you know, Britishness. I mean, it's probably no surprise that takes people to warm up some time.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, the concept of empire that we have in the United States and the concept of empire in Great Britain are very different. You know, the monarchy in Great Britain still really does control how governments work on a lot of these territories like Jersey, which is a peculiar possession of the crown. You know, the queen really does have ultimate say over what happens, way beyond what she has in places like Britain, where there's sort of a ceremonial, may I form a government in your name? Mm-hmm. And she says yes, you know, but she famously is not supposed to get political in those situations. However, in her realm, where she does have direct influence over the people running her territories or her peculiar possessions, she has direct authority. And it's not a democracy in the sense of what we perceive to be a democracy, where there are separations of powers and people are elected and things move along a line where if the electorate really doesn't like something, they can effectively remove it. They don't have that option in some of these places, and Jersey is one of them. You know, the electorate is allowed to elect certain people, but not the people with the most power. And so it is a very difficult situation, and this concept of the empire, you know, thou shalt not question it. And even if there are, you know, look, we all know if you're a powerful person, it's only a matter of time before you take a photograph with someone thinking it's just a fan or somebody who admires you. And then it turns out to be the wrong person. And, you know, we know that that can happen, but we're talking about something else. Yeah. We're talking about a pattern of behavior of embracing and giving a stamp of approval to people who are very well known to be the wrong sorts of people, mm-hmm. and what well known to be bad actors, and still allowing them to have that stamp of approval, which then endangers others. Mm.
Yeah, this is, you know, something in the, I know in the Twitter world where people have been trying to unpack the Trump-Russia global corruption, you know, story of how the hell Trump became president, and they start learning about all these different characters, and, you know, you find pictures of this person with that person, and speaking as somebody who trains intelligence analysts, you know, one of the things I try and remind the, you know, folks getting into this kind of thing is like, hold on, correlation and causation, not the same thing. Guilt by association, not the same thing. But this is different. This is, no, the queen does run this. This did happen on the watch of people she appointed and continued to support.
Yeah, and she was well aware of event that that's her job, is to come back to her, let her know what's going on, let her representatives know what's going on. At any time, the queen did not have to keep knighting, which she was doing and still does. She didn't have to keep knighting bailiffs on the island of Jersey who were directly involved in the papering over of child abuse. She could have said, right, you know, I'm going to have to draw a line on that one. I don't think I want to knight that person. But we have seen her consistently knight people who went out of their way to not, specifically got multiple reports of abusers who are powerful people, and then decided not to prosecute, decided they don't have private prosecution on the island of Jersey. They don't even have a sex offenders register. So like, how are regular people supposed to be protected when things don't get addressed? At any time, the queen could have, or her representatives, decided not to reward that sort of behavior. But she doesn't do that. And so she is not just complicit. She is a participant and what's happening on the island of Jersey. And I suspect if she's, you know, I can speak mainly for the island because that's the place that I have my expertise. But my understanding is she really falls short in a lot of her other areas of her realm. And people are increasingly speaking out. You know, that's what social media has a lot of. The people call it the toilet of the internet, but it's also a place for people to speak openly about what's happening, things that have not been known for so long. So it has been very helpful. Social media really has helped people around the world learn from people. For example, in Jersey, social media, activists in Jersey are now on social media and they're able to say, this is really happening. You know, we're real people. This is affecting us and we're trying to make change, but it's not coming to us. And a number of people in Jersey have said to me for years, the problems will not be solved on island because it's like a closed circuit system where anything that threatens the system will be subterfuged by the system. And so a lot of them realize it's only pressure from off island that will ever result in the island finally looking at itself and maybe changing some of its systems for the better.
I mean, that seems eminently sensible and very self-aware, especially when, you know, people cannot wrap their head around the farce that is saying there's $2 trillion booked on 5 miles by 9 miles. That means there isn't, because, you know, there means there's a power looking over that organization of basically accounting firms. You know, it's not there's no reason for the Isle of Jersey to have 2 trillion anything outside of, you know, perhaps individual bacteria or something, right? I mean, so who's behind that? And the answer is the City of London, Wall Street, and others, you know, that second economy we talk about. And that means, you know, maybe you appoint some people to do certain things on Jersey, you know, and maybe they're appointed by the monarch or not, but this is about the folks that are using that, frankly, that farce, that you know, illusion that, you know, this place doesn't have to report its money and this place doesn't have to be in touch with taxation agencies, and, you know, moreover, that there's some connection between that and some serious criminality that is not just financial. And at some point people need to not, you know, that's a crime against humanity.
$2 trillion on a 9 by 5 mile island is not just an accident of geography. You know, that was very much on purpose. And, I think you're totally right. You know, just to give a couple examples of what's going on the island, just a couple weeks ago, the couple that I wrote about in a recent article, an institutional investor who discovered what they alleged to be widespread global money laundering from the island.
An insane story for and wonderful, wonderfully written for those who haven't checked it out, about them, you know, finding, was it 360,000 documents on a squash court? We got the numbers
correct? Yeah, it was 350,000 pages in over 300 bank boxes piling up the walls. The cops that I interviewed said they'd never seen anything like it, and across jurisdictions, you know, Panama, British Virgin Islands, parts of Canada, parts of the US, all over Jersey and Europe and beyond, you know, Russia was involved as well. And yeah, as I was writing this article, I couldn't believe what I was writing. Yeah, sometimes while you're writing, you're like, oh my God, I can't even believe this is real. But while I reported it, one of the things I wanted to mention, and we'll mention the title, it's called The Heiress, the Queen, and the $1 trillion Tax Shelter. And it's an institutional investor, went out a couple weeks ago. We can link to it under, when you post this, I can link to it. But that being said, like, I found that the police investigation into the document leak, it was called Operation Scarlet. I had the original documents. I had the authenticated documents from the police. Mm-hmm. When I called them to ask questions, the Jersey police told me they had no reference to the case. No reference number, no reference to the case. I emailed them the documents. They authenticated them and said, but we just don't have this on record. And this is how things go in Jersey. Things just disappear. This investigation was in 2015. and is only really coming out now because those involved got frustrated that Jersey financial services, the regulators, the courts, and the police weren't doing anything. That's why we're all hearing about it now. But what's fascinating is the case has already disappeared. The documents, the 350,000 pages, have been turned over to a law firm to put into a safe so no one can see them. The only reason we have any access is because the couple that found them wisely scanned many of them so that we can read through them now, thank goodness. And then in addition, I found that the couple is now being dragged through the courts in Jersey, not to get to the bottom of the fraud, but to silence them. And if you read the court documents, it specifically says they shall not pursue the fraud and they shall not go any further. And they have been fined by the court for contempt for continuing to try to get to the bottom of fraud related to their own funds, their own family money, as well as many other people who are affected by it. And I was just like, wow, can we release the judgment so everyone can see how ludicrous this is? Well, the Jersey court has decided to seal it, so you can't even see the judgment. And that is quintessential Jersey. If it's something that looks like it's enabling fraud, you will not get to see that it exists. If it's an investigation of money laundering, the case disappears from the police records. That is just quintessential Jersey, and that is not historic. It's happening in the present day.
So, you know, it'll seem like a left turn here, but what Facebook just said, they lost like 533 million record, or, you know, user profiles or something. And, you know, you find out, this bank got lost a zillion records and, you know, 2 billion Yahoo emails and whatnot. At some point, there is just, you know, so much compromising information out there on frauds and whatever else, that this whole game of, we'll just have a court say it's sealed because reason of blah, 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 shazam, that isn't, it's like, okay, that worked, you know, that worked before every single computer that you use for these transfers. And let's say you've added cryptocurrencies and, you know, other types of digital transfers. Well, each of those leaves a log file. And you just can't disappear stuff the way you used to be able to. At some point, you know, you've just got so much hard evidence that can go in someone's courtroom. And it's funny to follow some of the prosecutors at the Southern District of New York, current and, or, you know, mostly past, some of the cats who've served with Preet Bharara and others. And I saw them online joking about the jurisdiction of SDNY. In the Department of Justice, are like, we have jurisdiction for everything out to roughly Neptune if we want, because every financial transaction runs through Manhattan at some point. And if we see it go by, we see one file go by, we can declare, we are the sovereign district. We can declare, we gonna sue you. We gonna prosecute you. Maybe the Jersey court can go, shazam, shubbly wow, this doesn't exist anymore.
But that's exactly what they do.
But it's looking dumber, is my point. It's like, guys, okay.
Yes.
You've got a school that was an industrial rape factory on Nazi tunnels. You have $2 trillion on 5 miles by 9 miles. And the queen something something. What the fuck? All right. Are we done yet? Are we done? Or are we going to keep this up? You know.
But they this is part of the reason why they continue to do these things. Jersey is an island, right? I think that's crucial to their story, because on the island of Jersey, which has about 100,000 people living on it, give or take, they are very used to containing runaway stories, containing reporting that is not friendly to their agenda. And they're used to also, you know, smearing people or attacking people who, again, aren't consistent with their agenda. And the government has a very specific sort of tolerance level for what it wants reported about it. So even when things do get out, there's this concept that has been nurtured for many years on the island after so many wars, right? They were invaded by the Nazis. They were invaded before that, you know, by the Vikings, the Romans, etc. You can go way back in time. But they have nurtured this concept of enemies of the island, and I put quotes around it. But when I first went there, one of the police officers who was then serving in parliament on the island, which has its own parliament, he looked out the window and was like, oh, that's what enemies of the island say. I was like, who is that? Like, you know, the island is an island, but there, you don't have any enemies. You're not at war. But there's this concept of everyone band together. Let's repel any outsidery type ideas, even if they are about democracy or freedom of speech or a court system that's accountable or separation of powers and other really newfangled ideas.
Okay, I can say for certain that my readership in general is really into justice and really doesn't like, you know, dodgy corruption and bad guys, and generally are really educated, and these people didn't even know where the hell Jersey was and were, you know, humble enough to say, can someone point, okay, I accept that this is a great story and very important, where the fuck is it? So how can they be, if my justice minded, you know, dogs of war aren't angry, you know, aren't an enemy of the island. I mean, who is? I mean, you know, most people don't know they exist. So
yeah, no one's an enemy of the island. And like earlier you were like, maybe the island doesn't have 2 trillion anything except bacteria. And I was thinking, well, you know, see, I could see them being hurt by that, you know, like bacteria. Like, so we can say two trillion blades of grass instead of 2 trillion bacteria. But like there is a feeling of us against them that not the ordinary folk, the good folk of Jersey, believe in or engender, but the power structure will immediately kind of go toward that narrative.
That's
as like sort of a go-to position of, you know, enemy of the island, we have to repel this, they don't care about us, they don't understand us. There's, because it's such a very deep culture going back thousands of years on the island, there's a feeling of, they don't get our traditions. They don't get who we are. They disrespect our heritage. And that's not at all true, because people like me, for example, it's one of the things I love the most about Jersey is its rich history, its heritage. You know, it is a beautiful place with really amazing people with amazing stories that are in their own right worth celebrating. And my love of the island does connect directly with my outrage about some of the ways that these miscarriages of justice and deficits in the democracy affect the people living there, because I see what it could be, right? I see the good side, and knowing what's happening to some of the people there, it's very painful if you actually care about the island. And it's definitely like motivational for me as a journalist, and you know, it's a tough story to keep reporting on. And it's good that your listeners, you know, do care about justice, because honestly, it will be pressure from off island that changes things. It's very clear it's not going to be just on island. You know, there's going to need to be a balance between off island pressure and outrage combined with people living there saying, you know, we really need to draw a line. This is getting out of hand. But the government has become very kind of confident in its ability to control on island consensus. They managed to persuade everybody to go along with reopening the children's home where all this violence took place for decades, reopening it as a youth hostel.
Yeah.
And you don't see people losing it over that. In fact, I've had numbers of people reach out to me defending, saying, well, the building didn't hurt anyone, so let's bring children back into the building, even though horrible abuse and violence happened here going back to the Nazi regime continuously since then. And let's act like nothing happened and just bring more kids over here. And I just, you know, you can use a building for many things. You don't have to bring children right back to the place of violence. And it's hard to understand why a child would be comfortable with that. But as the protectors of children, I'm not sure how any parent could justify having their kids in a former children's home known for horrible abuse and death for children, going from the Nazi regime all the way till the children's home closed in 1986, but then children continued to be abused there even after it closed. You know, it's not a good place to keep bringing children. It's not appropriate to keep bringing children there. You can use the building for something else. There was a UK judge in 2017 who headed up an inquiry into the child abuse in the government-run children's homes on the island, including Hot de la Garan, which is the one we're talking about here, that's now being used as a youth hostel. And she said the home should be demolished because she felt that was her major recommendation for what to do, was demolish the home, turn the land into a memorial or a park or a place to reflect for those who, you know, who suffered. And there was a huge sort of circling of the wagons amongst the press on the island and different people involved in the government insisting the home not be demolished and children should be brought right back into it. And today I get notes about, well, it's raising money for charity, so it's okay. And again, like, people who live there don't seem to grasp the totality of how serious this is. Somebody wrote to me and said, well, schools have violence too, but you don't shut the school down. You still let kids attend school. You know, lots of buildings have lots of things happen in them. But I don't think we can think of many buildings that have had this many things happen in it as Hat de la Garenne. We're talking many decades of this. Yeah. I don't know if you can just normalize that, but they do that. They do that over there. And you will have islanders telling you why it's okay.
And, you know, I don't think I don't believe the people of Newtown, Connecticut rebuilt Sandy Hook, did they? And it's not named the same.
You know, if you had systemic government sponsored violence versus somebody invades the, you know, there are very many different ways violence can happen somewhere. And so it's not about, you know, six of one, half dozen of the other. It's more but a place that was from inception a place that children long knew was a place of violence and much worse. Is this an appropriate place to keep insisting on bringing children? And the answer is no. Under no circumstances is it appropriate. And it's, you know, it's hard when I have these conversations with people on the island because they'll be like, well, we're involved now, so how could you possibly think anything might happen? You know, and you're like, you can't stop something from happening. You know, abuser's gonna abuse. And I don't know what would happen if this island had any further incidents in the building related to child abuse. I mean, there's a certain point where if everybody knows that there's abuse that's gone on there and continues to bring children in, at what point does that become like a wider culpability, right? That so many people decided not to object again. You know, it makes us start looking culturally acceptable as opposed to a few individuals, a few bad people, some high-level people making the wrong decisions here. It starts to look like it's becoming normalized. And one of the concerns about some of those cultural situations that I observe as a journalist who's not from Jersey in Jersey is this constant push to normalize situations that are not normal. It isn't normal to have violence and abuse in a building perpetrated on children for decades and decades and decades with really no pause. And then to say, hey, right, we're glad that we stopped that and we have an inquiry and we're all done here. Okay, let's bring some more children back in. Like, it's not okay. It's not appropriate. And yet I don't see editorials in the paper saying this isn't right. And I don't see big campaigns saying we shouldn't do this, right? Like, there's a tendency to just kind of get ground under the boot heel over there where people just are like, right, I can't have to pick my battles. I'm not going to pick this battle. And so here we see something like a youth hostel reopening exactly in the footprint, exactly in the building where all these horrific crimes against children happened. And you just have to ask yourself, how is it we just went through like a decade of soul searching and getting to the bottom of what happened? And, you know, the film that we just put out talking about this and the survivors and their stories, and then we still are bringing children back. It's, to me, as a journalist whose job is to just objectively look at things without any bias, you have to say, I just can't explain how that's acceptable. But there are many people on the island who will insist to you that it is acceptable.
So, you know, I think when people envision an enabler of abuse, you know, there's the picture of somebody who's picking up the phone to call their employers to make an excuse or cleaning up after them, like literally. But in a complex system that involves, you know, abuse, particularly at this scale, you know, the ecosystem around it, you know, being there and present and still showing up every day and not going, hey, we should not have a youth hostel here. Or, you know, back when it was going on, you know, very actively, hey, you know, the giant rape factory up on the hill, we gotta shut that down, guys. You know, at some point, you know, the silence is, and, you know, and the support of all the things you love, oh no, this is a great place. you know, that becomes the enabling. I live in St. Louis currently, and I gotta say, you know, one of the things I've seen that's very similar to this dynamic, it reminds me a lot of Ferguson. When that went down in 2014, which was, you know, a very unique situation. We haven't learned all the parts of it yet at all. You know, there's a lot of just purely homegrown things that were just natively, organically finally came to a head. Some of them were not at all. Yeah. For example, the Ferguson city government took $1 million out in court fines and traffic tickets from the population of 17,000 people. On the day Michael Brown got shot, it was $3 million. That was 2010 to 2014. They tripled in a little over 3 years. You know, so that was going to pop at some point. But when it was happening, you know, I remember going to my local grocery store and seeing a Humvee, not the commercialized version, but an actual, you know, Humvee with a turret on the back in the parking lot of our grocery store. And we only live 15, you know, minutes away from Ferguson on the highway. Can be there very quickly. It's not so far away, and you and I both have a Vermont connection. You know that 15 minutes away in Vermont is, you know, your neighbor. You're talking about the same high school, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas here you have crossed 20 high schools or whatnot in that same period of time. But, you know, for me, not being from here, I was like, this is right next door, and I'm going, there's a Humvee in the parking lot, and I'm looking at everybody, you know, getting their fruit and their breakfast cereal and stuff, and I'm like, hey, did anyone notice the military equipment outside? And the fact that, you know, you know, this place that everybody here knows does not look like it looked on the news, where, you know, basically, I could take Disney World and you chuck some tear gas canisters in and you do it at night and you get some orange lighting and it'll look like fucking Sarajevo getting shelled during the war. I mean, you know, and that's what happened to Ferguson, where it was like, you know, people acted like it was, you know, Yugoslavia coming apart, and it's like, just turn the camera to the left, guys. You know, get rid of the tear gas, and you got like the bike shop and the brew pub. You know, it is not a war zone. Now it's a different thing because you had this there. You had the media trying to make it into something that it wasn't. But I was just thinking about the social dynamic of, you know, there are some really bad people here in St. Louis in the power structure who are doing some horrific things with justice.
It's hard, right? Because you don't want to, a lot of people don't know what's going on, right? And they, you know, there does need to be an ecosystem that's friendly to things when they break down, because then those things wouldn't happen if the ecosystem was going to repel such things. Yeah. So
my thought
is fair
they don't know because they don't want to know. They don't want to know.
And then there's that. But then there's the, you know, there's so many gradations, right? The people who know nothing and have no idea. Just you and I both came from, you know, my other home is Brattleboro, Vermont, and you came from Rutland, Vermont. And I can tell you, I get it. You know, a small community, people know each other, everybody knows each other. If somebody came, an outsider like me, came in and said, right, you know, we have a place called The Retreat in Brattleboro that's celebrated in movies and all sorts of places. You know, there's a lot of weird science fiction type things out there that like refer to The Retreat in a cultural way as like a touchstone for an insane asylum. And it was for a while. And it has a graveyard out there and has a giant tower that they made the patients build that then they jumped off of and now is closed. It's still there, but then they started killing themselves off the tower they'd built, you know? And so it has its own weird dark history. But if somebody came along who was an outsider and said, yeah, this is globally, from a global perspective, the most messed up place ever, and just happens to be in your town, it's totally understandable that a local would be like, screw you, my town's fine. This is like a lot of weird places. Lots of places have weird stuff, and I'm not hearing it. And I get that feeling. I get it. And I understand that it would probably happen in my town, in Brattleboro, if that came up. And I don't know. You're in Rutland. You tell me how you think people have responded.
Personally, I think Rutland... No, sorry. Accent's going to come out.
Let me hear the Rutland accent. I want to hear it.
Do charm. I don't know. I don't think so. It's like no one's going to tell... You know, if people from outside are like, this is the most messed up thing we've ever heard. We're like, welcome to Rutland. Yeah, dude.
Well, or maybe you do that. Maybe you would also act like it was no big deal. But I think the problem is no one wants to hear that this very scary thing is in their backyard. That's you know, my very presence in Jersey in some ways can be an affront, because I came from really far away saying, I've never seen anything quite like this. And, you know, those who are in the know understand why I'm saying that. But there's a lot of people on the island who are just really lovely people, just living their lives, and this sounds to their ears offensive, intrusive, judgmental. And for the people, you know, I told you earlier about the person who reached out to me about, well, Hot de la Guerre and the children's home can totally be a youth hostel. What's the big deal? Why can't we make something positive out of something negative? Which is fair enough, right? Fair enough point. But the problem is there's a certain line you have to draw at a certain point when a place is basically known to be the place to go abuse children for decades. It isn't safe anymore to bring children there. But people who are trying to be involved in making it different, they're not going to want to hear that, right? And so it becomes a complicated conversation with people who live there versus what people far away, people maybe who are listening to this, say, right, I can tell you right now, don't put children there. But if it's close up, people start to lose that perspective. And so it is a tricky conversation. As a journalist who's visiting Jersey on a regular basis, it's a fine, tricky tightrope for me to walk.
Yeah, I mean, I was being jocular about Rutland, Vermont, but, you know, I think that's because there's so few illusions about the place is noble, or, you know, we got a long, proud tradition. I mean, we do at being generally recalcitrant, and there's the general, you know, I mean.
Can I live in a place that's known for recalcitrance? Because that's just kind of amazing and fabulous.
Yeah, it doesn't feel that. I mean, Rutland, you get a place. They got places to rent in Rutland. I guarantee you there's real estate.
They were giving places practically away in Rutland.
Yeah, why do you think that is, dude? Why do you think? But I think, you know, if we heard that there was, you know, if we heard that 40... I mean, there was a scandal there, you know, a few years back where I believe it was the... one of the high-ranking officers in the police department was harboring child sex abuse media on his computer, and he was prosecuted, and, you know, it was a scandal. And I'm not going to say that was just an isolated incident. We don't know how isolated it was, but, you know, if we heard more, we'd put more people in prison. Is my understanding. But that's different than hearing that like 50% of the infrastructure of your community is more monstrous than you thought. It's different. I mean, we have sort of a daily grind of we're all second cousins, and, you know, you know, there's no one's going to get rich here. No one's, you know, the humility's already dialed in. But, you know, if I found out that half of my neighbors were, you know, we're trafficking kids or something, you know, it'd be pretty tough. But
people in Jersey are also very proud. Again, small island, but it's like its own country. You know, mm-hmm. Family history is going back thousands of years. And no, they don't take kindly to being second guessed, or they might feel their intelligence is being insulted if you tell them you understand something that they don't about their own island. And I very much sympathize with that attitude. I had to really put aside my own journalistic ego, and you know, I had to change myself in order to approach Jersey, because Jersey's kind of like a souffle. Like if you throw it in the oven, try to make it fast, it'll collapse on you. You know, you will change the, you will change the object by observing it too much. And so you really do want, if you're a journalist who's genuinely trying to do writing about a place without disturbing it more than you need to, it's a tricky, it's very tricky. It's not easy. And you want to be really respectful of their heritage and identity and history and feeling. But then you also are dealing with a culture that may have an ecosystem that may have allowed for some of this to go on for too long. And, you know, there are quite a few, like, quote unquote, woke people on the island who are very able to understand the two polarities, right? But that's not everyone. And there's a lot of very good people who are just trying to do good things who, you know, who you might end up offending even though you don't want to, because of your job as a journalist to look at things in a different way. So it's hard. It's challenging. That's all I want to say about that. But it's challenging. And even when you feel very respectful, it can still be hard.
You know, there's some ugly work to do. Because at some point you got, you go, yeah, well, you got a lot of child rape and you got 2 trillion no one's got a hold of. So what are we going to do here? And, you know, it gets a little indelicate. And there, you know, I think it's admirable that you really see the humanity and the people. These aren't just the cast of characters in a, you know, some story about financial corruption. These are real human beings with a real, you know, unique culture and who need to, you know, maybe not have a fucking youth hostel on, you know, the you know, the rape factory, you know.
That's an interesting shorthand.
I mean, at some point there's some...
I can see them being very upset with that shorthand, but I do understand what you're saying, because for a long time that was, it was a magnet for that. And I fear, because of the nature of a lot of these crimes, you know, this recidivism rate for pedophiles is higher than almost any other crime. I think last I checked was the highest. And
makes sense.
There's real fear about, you know, the survivors I've interviewed, none of them have said, oh, right, I think it's great, it's a youth hostel. They're all really upset about that. And those who were brought there over and over again, you know, they know there's an attachment to the location of a location as a place for this sort of activity. And so they certainly don't feel, they don't feel better knowing that maybe some well-meaning people are trying to create something positive. Their attitude is this place just can't be a place for children, you know, anything but that. And it's a very, it's, you know, again, open and shut in my eyes, like, of course it should never be used for children ever again, but people on the island will debate this as though it's a reasonable debate. And it's just a good example of how the culture and how the hierarchy on the island will manage cultural debates and civic debates in such a way that they will sort of stack the deck in favor of whatever it is they think should be done. And one of the trends I see on the island, and I see this everywhere, I see corruption, is they'll find like high-level activists or people who are known to be, you know, for example, friends of children on the island, or very big children's rights activists, or they'll ally themselves. Oh, why don't we give you a job doing this thing? Or why don't we hire you for that thing? Or, you know, we'll make you an important person in this realm or that realm to get them on board with something they want to do. For example, opening a Delagaran as a youth hostel, you know, directly involving activists in doing that, right? And those activists are thinking this is a compliment and this is a prestige marker. But unfortunately, it's part of the plan is to, you know, if they can't take you down, what they'll do is try to flatter you, which is interesting. I've noticed in Jersey, the first thing they'll do is try to take you down. But then if they can't, they will try to flatter you. And that often does work, and it's very potent. because the person's like, oh, we're now all going to be friends. We have a shared agenda. But actually, no, you're still following their agenda. Mm-hmm. They're just bringing you on board. And it's
you just negotiated their cost up.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I would say those who I valued the most in my research, that's how they were gotten in the end. That's how they were captured in the end. Somebody gave them a job. Somebody gave them some prestige. They gave them a brag or some claim to something that would make them feel aggrandized. And as a result, they became neutralized.
It's interesting. I think that's actually, that dynamic's gone on in a lot of places.
It's a very smart play in the playbook.
It is.
Very smart play.
Always, you know, it's a good way to get somebody who's smart and very, and thus can analyze something and can be skeptical. And well, I see what you guys are up to. And, you know, the smart play is like, well, they're just not getting their cut. And they get their cut and they're like, well, it's not that bad. I mean, not if it's taking care of a great guy like me. Right?
Yeah,
I think what really happened in the kind of the Trump era was like we got the most rapacious, insane criminals in a place where they're, you know, some of them were really, you know, visited with this bizarre worldview of like, you know, we're going to be transhumanists and maybe global warming won't be so bad if, you know, 2 or 3 billion people die from a pandemic. I mean, there's some on the top of the social heap, there's some crazy people who were looking to, you know, ride out the apocalypse in their little hole in New Zealand or whatnot. And those people are like, all for me, and you can all die. And I don't have to pay. No, we got, you know, Facebook, and we've got social media, you know, control stuff, and we can make elections go the way we want. We don't have to pay any of you off, so go fuck yourselves, you know, smart people. And you know, I was like, what are they doing? Well, they're taking all their money and going home. And I think that just opened up enough people. You know, I'm not saying that the people that are all the people that are, you know, are exposing, you know, the corruption, which is an amazing historical moment right now, you know, wouldn't, you know, if they had been paid off, but I think some of them would, would have been like, this is okay. But, you know, they just, you know, the, you know, it's when you got to talk to people up and down the, you know, the social hierarchy, no matter where you're at, to understand what the stories are. It's like, you know, working people, they've been getting screwed constantly and, you know, more intensely since the 70s and 80s. And, you know, this is why Trump, this is one of the reasons that Trump ended up prevailing in places they didn't think they would, because there are just enough people, you know, and a lot of people, you know, read my Twitter, hear my stuff elsewhere and think that I'm a sort of leftist partisan in some fashion when it's not true. You know, a lot of the people that voted Trump in were Obama voters in some of these states. And that's hard for people to swallow, but it's like, no, there's, you know, places in these towns, you know, that are real places in Ohio and Illinois and, you know, Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, and places that are like, no, I get screwed by Democrats. I get screwed by Republicans. You know, maybe if you smart asses with your master's degree get scared, maybe you'll do something different. That was the thought behind a lot of it. And it was, I think there was not enough understanding of what it'd be like to give security clearances to mobsters from Queens. But that's not their response. I mean, I'm not letting them off the hook entirely for giving us Trump, but it's not, they're not responsible for thinking about, you know, those implications. The fact is, you know, some of us were standing by, even, you know, there are people who are plenty progressive minded and do want fairness for folks, but there are plenty of people in the intellectual set who were not up in arms about how completely screwed regular, you know, people were in Australia, France, Germany, America, mm-hmm. Canada. And, you know, finally, we had this outcome, and maybe we're lucky that it didn't, you know, it scared, you know, curious intellectuals enough to, start digging out the offshore, you know, it's amazing stuff that I used to do 10, 15 years ago as part of my working intelligence. You know, it's just crazy for me, you know, to be doing, frankly, to be doing a podcast about offshore banking and also talk about, you know, the role of hostile foreign intelligence services or whatnot, and having people go, you know, have a native sense of, wait a minute, what's happening in that country? That sounds very Kremlin-y. But, you know, next up, a podcast about, you know, money offshore in Jersey, it's like, holy crap, like, what happened here? And it's like, all these people started getting, you know, curious about how stuff really works, because the whole system started biting all of us.
And you were talking about how your, you know, a lot of your listeners, like, as you said, very humbly said, what is Jersey? I don't know what Jersey is. You know, if you go to an atlas and you're like, you like look at all regions in Europe, there's no Jersey. And if you look under UK, there's no Jersey. you're like, where is it then? Like, if it's not affiliated with anything, it's not affiliated with Europe, it's not affiliated with France. It used to be part of the land bridge between Great Britain and Europe. So it's this broken piece that's been there forever and, you know, has this really ancient history. But it's not, it is really autonomous. It has its own parliament, its own treasury. It has its own, my favorite thing about Jersey, its own telecom company and postal system, which means it's not unusual for your mail to get screwed around with. Or in my case, I had every single item I tried to send to my home from Jersey was diverted to Germany, opened, and then sent to all a number of places before it finally arrived to my house and even razor bladed over and over again and retaped. Yep. Yes.
Huh.
And, you know, of course, when I opened it, there was like one little notice at the bottom and it said, your packages have been opened for the following reasons. Yeah, I'm not kidding. Yeah, I noticed you razor bladed them. They've been opened for the following reasons. And then there was a little list.
We wanted
to. And it was like, it was basically like, it said toxin, you know, contraband. Like, there's a little list. At the bottom, it just said other. And that
other.
Was I had other. Meaning your person of interest. I'm happy to tell you.
Other.
Well, I did. I contacted ICE. I had an inside person who was able to, and he was like, look, you're a person of interest. You're never going to find out what's going on. But they diverted your packages to Germany. They used to have a relationship with Germany in the aftermath of World War II, Nazi regime on the island.
I have a question.
Germany kind of does a lot of extra stuff, I've noticed from my own experiences having my stuff diverted to Germany.
East Germany or West Germany? I'm just curious.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. It just said Germany. It's a good question. Maybe I'm sure someone on the island knows.
Is it Dresden? It might be. Is it Leipzig?
Really funny. No, I don't know. Your point about where is Jersey, it's true, because Jersey, as you noted in the introduction to your initial podcast on this subject, has done a wonderful job of flying under the radar and being that really great place to hide your money that no one knows about. They don't even know how to find it on the map. That's fabulous. That's perfect. But the queen protects you, and crown officers are in charge, not a real democracy. And this is all good. You know, what they'll say on the island of Jersey is, hey, the great thing about Jersey is you don't have to worry about the prime minister getting a vote of no confidence and the entire political system changing immediately. We don't have that here. They don't even have political parties. Their parliament is unicameral, and dissent is strongly discouraged. What is encouraged is rubber stamping legislation, without question. And that is why lots of people think that Jersey is a great place to leave their money, because they think it's a place of absolute certainty when it comes to political control.
This is sort of like, you know, form your corporation in Delaware because of the stable corporate laws.
Yeah, and in Jersey, they're not selling tax sheltering, they're selling the law. They are amazingly good at creating law and court decisions and regulation around your personal tailored needs. And if you're bringing enough money to the island, you know, the court can show you how they can seal documents when somebody comes out against you. And that document doesn't exist. Somebody comes at you with a police investigation. That police investigation doesn't exist. Oh, we have no idea what you're talking about. I reached out to the regulators about the 350,000 pages with the trust company and the alleged money laundering. And the financial regulator said, well, it's a civil situation, so we don't get involved. And then they also wrote, it's a criminal situation, so that's up to the police. And you're like, what is it? I mean, mm-hmm. does the regulator actually do anything? Like, criminal doesn't matter. Fraud apparently seems to go by the board. So what does the regulator do? I mean, I got some excuses on a form letter email, which clearly had been sent to other journalists. But, you know, what is the regulator for if it's not regulating things like making sure there isn't money laundering?
Indeed. But they're selling law is a hell of a thing. I mean, that's...
They're selling law malleability. In fact, one of the highest level lawyers on the island, I found an old video. He was talking about growing up, being a young lawyer on the island of Jersey. And he said, I learned our laws were not sophisticated enough. And he said, so what I learned is if there's no law for something, you make it up. And then he chuckled, ha-ha, you make it up. Hmm. And I thought, wow. That's amazing he's saying that now in his, like, older years, that he would admit that.
You know, but if that were a township, which 5x9, I mean, that's not even a particularly large place in Vermont, you know? Right? They'd do that all day long. The difference is they don't have $2 trillion.
Yeah, the $2 trillion is sort of a game changer.
It's kind of a thing, right?
You know, yeah, it is. There's a lot of people with a lot of fingers and a lot of pies when you have $2 trillion.
A Scutney, Vermont, but with $2
trillion. Oh my God, can you imagine?
I mean, right?
That's terrifying. Don't tell a Scutney because they might do it.
Wallingford, Vermont, with $2 trillion. don't tell a Scutney God. They might do
don't
it.
Don't tell Wallingford either. Well, you know, okay, if we're gonna say this, we have to say one more thing. I don't want to make this much longer, but you do know that Vermont is the center of, like, insane amounts of offshore industry when it comes to insurance, right?
You mean the captive insurance industry?
Yeah, it's fascinating. Like, if you go to, like, a conference in London, they're like, Vermont is here, everybody! Like, they're super excited. And it's so funny, because you're like, Vermont? I didn't even think Vermont had, like, skin in any real game, but that's, like, the big game they have skin in.
Yep. I know where those offices are in Burlington, too.
It's fascinating.
You know why? Yeah, because I've been to the Offshore Leaks database, and you go, you know, for you kids playing at home, go to the Offshore Leaks database and just start putting in zip codes around you.
Where's the center of the offshore captive insurance industry in Vermont? I love that it's quote unquote offshore, even though we're in
Burlington,
Vermont. But, like, is there a address that has, like, all the offices in it with, like, 8,000 phones ringing off the hook, like in that kind of weird tax shelter style?
Possibly.
I wouldn't be shocked if there was.
I think it's off Winooski Ave. I'm going to have to check it. I think I know where it is. I think I don't know what law firms are involved. I don't want to libel no one, but I'm pretty, you know, like, look, nothing in Vermont is that big, but it can have.
It's just so funny. They're like Caymans, London, some random place in Vermont. It's just really funny.
Why?
So yeah, I just want to make it clear that I'm not throwing stones in a glass house. Like, I fully understand that these weird holes exist in many places. I try to not, I try to remember that the child abuse quotient is certainly, like, that makes you kind of head and shoulders above the rest. However, these sorts of situations exist in a lot of unlikely places, including Vermont.
I mean, it's about the rule of law.
Exactly.
You know, and on the Vermont side, you know, something a lot of people don't know, I'd have to get the exact statistics, but, you know, I was told that, you know, like an unnatural amount of, I forget if it is the Sinaloa cartel or the Jalisco's in Mexico, like some, you know, unfathomable amount of their firearms came through Vermont because we have no firearms laws, basically. And everyone's armed. And, you know, and you think, you know, and my conceit as a Vermonter for years as well, you know, we don't need the same laws as everyone else because, you know, we're not shooting each other in the ass like you know, LA or Chicago or New York or whatever. So we have different laws. But here's the thing. Yeah, that's right. That does work out for Maine. It does work out for Vermont. But if you, if it's so easy to get these things, it's easy to get them in and out too. And now you've got stuff trafficked. And so your little, you know, it took me a while to get my, to get my head around is, you know, that which serves us locally here. Cause you know, we're armed more than freaking Afghanistan and, yeah. and we have the lowest crime in America, but that doesn't mean that we're not given weapons to killers. And so
absolutely, it's totally true. We're all interconnected. And by the way, I might add some of the things I find very sad, but also not surprising about Vermont, knowing how Vermonters are, mm-hmm. even though we don't have this horrible gun violence, right? With people showing up and I mean, we have had some incidents, but we don't have this high level of incidents per free for all firearm situation, which we have in Vermont is this kind of free for all firearm situation. But we do have this very high level of suicide. And so you're like, oh, for all the guns we have, instead of shooting other people, people are more likely to shoot themselves, which is so sad and makes you wonder what's going on with the overall mentality of the state that that would be more likely.
Winter is 8.5 months and your income will never get above $27,000 a year, most likely. So sorry.
Have you ever, just because of the winter, I mean, been like, maybe... I've never felt like that, but maybe some people do. I mean, it is a pretty long winter. You should not live in Vermont if you're not okay with yourself. That's for sure, because those nights are dark. They are dark.
You see, you got the right attitude. You belong. You can do it.
So I don't know how to wrap this up other than to say for everyone listening, please watch Jersey. Please be a friend of Jersey. It's a wonderful place with really wonderful people. But their structure and system is something that, you know, for people on the outside, you know, any way that people can occasionally opine on, you know, not being just not supportive of the structure and supportive of the people, because the system is really the problem over there. The people are actually very lovely. Some of the higher level people, of course, are incentivized to keep the system the way it is, but you know, it's not going to be there forever, right? The world marches on. People age out of these things, but it's the mm-hmm. system really to help offshore industry, but not necessarily help people there. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I just want to be really clear. In the 10 years I've covered Jersey, multiple members of parliament who stood up to defend child abuse victims lost their jobs, lost their houses, were forced into bankruptcy by the government on really minor charges. Stuart Seavey's house, the health minister, was raided. His whole life was turned upside down because he didn't update his driver's license or his registration like on time. They mm-hmm. used that as like a reason to go for it. Another couple that were both members of parliament pushing for child abuse victims' rights. Mm-hmm. They were bankrupted because the local and only newspaper on the island kept smearing them over and over again. Yeah. They finally sued the paper and everyone piled on and like drove them into bankruptcy. The court tried to fine them for just bringing the case. And I mean, you see this time after time, the police officers suspended, the police officers driven off the island. It's just not a good situation. People don't feel it's safe. You know, if your health minister, if your member of parliament, if your chief of police all get driven away, what chance do you have? Somebody who's a resident who just wants to see things go better. Like, what chance do you have mm-hmm. of not also having something terrible happen? And I've had people come to me and say, my assets were stripped from me. My house was taken. Yeah. You know, I get calls from the police. Oh, we need to come in and check some things out just because they spoke about a meeting. And it's really that bad. People who've lost their jobs or their boss is like, we can't have somebody who's political in this environment. You have to go. You know, it's just really that bad for a lot of people. So please keep an eye on Jersey and please keep Jersey in your heart because it's a wonderful place with wonderful people and it's not a good situation. That system and that structure is not a good situation.
Well, perhaps we'll all be a friend of the truth and we'll see where it takes us.
Excellent.
Thanks, Leah.